What about our Chief Inquisitor? And we've asked Bob to take 10 minutes to give his perspectives, his key takeouts from this conference program. And Bob, I wonder if you could take the time to do that and include perhaps in your comments some observations of the comparison of this kind of interaction with what you see in the US going to conferences across the states.
Sure.
So thanks, Bob. Okay. 10 minutes.
10 minutes, whoa. I
attend probably 15 conferences a year in the US, sometimes as many as 20, sometimes as a speaker, always as an attendee. I'm always taking notes. And as I told Graham 2 years ago, this is, from a purely investment standpoint, this is better than anything we've got going in the US. In terms of evaluating the investment process, there's nothing really comparable in the US and not that much interest in it, oddly enough. And there are a variety of reasons. I mean, we've had great presentations. Jason, as I said this morning, for those of you who are here, Jason Zweig gave a wonderful presentation, actually twice at two different meetings. Bryce James, at my behest, has spoken twice. You know, so we've got the dialogue going, but nothing that explores the investment landscape as systematically or as rigorously as what you have going here. So the first thing I want to do is I want to get a round of applause for Graham and Deirdre, who do, I think, a wonderful job of doing something unique in the world. And so thank you. And they have, I'm sure they have a few staff people over there that probably ought to be thanked, but we'll just forget them for now. My takeaways here, I'm going to go through it session by session. My first takeaway, you know, listening to Bryce, the third time I've heard him, seems to me the most important two things to understand about his presentation. Number one is you've got these fat tail events. You've got events that, according to the standard bell curve, should not happen, should not have happened in the history of the universe. And they're happening roughly every 3 years. So, and we may be going through one of those fat tail events at this very moment as we speak, which means adds a little energy to the conference, so to speak. I think what we need, one of the things we need to do is recognize that there are going to be unexpected, anomalous events in the market that simply are not addressed by the standard models. We need better models, but in the meantime, we just need to be more flexible. We need to tell our clients, stuff happens. And when stuff happens, we're going to prepare you for it as best we can. And of course, you know how to prepare, diversification, care, listening to Tim every once in a while, although I wouldn't make it a daily event, you understand. And the second thing I think that I get from his presentation consistently is that we've got a lot more knowledge and computing power than we ever had before, and we're not really using it very effectively. And so we need to start using it. And, you know, people are asking me, you know, how many people are doing what Bryce is doing? Nobody is doing what Bryce is doing, okay? He is, I think, the single most sophisticated in terms of using the computer and using modern equations to address some of the basic issues in the investment markets. He's unique. Now, that doesn't mean you won't be seeing 10 of him, you know, in 10 years or 50 or 100. I don't know. But I guess what I'm saying is pay attention to the increasing use of data, computer power, sophisticated equations. Recognize that modern portfolio theory is 1950s technology. And it's time we started opening our brains and looking further. So enough about that. There's a lot more to that session, but that's really what the takeaways that I get from it anyway. As far as the retirement of retirement is concerned, the major takeaway from that is that there are a lot of different future expenses and numbers that are not being put into the standard retirement sufficiency analysis equations. When you look at whether a client can or cannot afford to retire or how to get them on track to retire, chances are we're tending to use a lower lifespan than your clients will be achieving, particularly since they will tend to be better cared for and more wealthy than the average human population. You'll also probably not have these anomalous expenses where you have, you know, elderly parents and adult-age children still drawing on the resources of the would-be retirees. And, of course, if they do live past their retirement age, their actuarial assumption age, then they suddenly get into this world of extreme healthcare costs. And those are not being factored in by anybody anywhere in the world. I don't see anybody who's factoring in a realistic assumption of what healthcare costs will cost from age 85 to 100. And so it's time to start thinking about those issues. It's time to start preparing for them. Otherwise, you know, you're not going to get a positive outcome. You're going to get people who run out of money. And this is happening in the U.S. I think something like 6 out of every 10 bankruptcies are triggered by healthcare costs. And so you don't want that to happen to your clients. Bigger picture really was not addressed directly. Tim did a little bit of it. The retirement of retirement, we're seeing in the U.S. a trend, and this is something that Beth addressed, toward people working in retirement. And there's actually a really good book on the subject called The New Retirementality. It's a little old now, but it really addresses the fact that retirement, the concept of retirement, is really a new idea. It really came about when Social Security was invented in the U.S., and it goes back to fairly recent German, when the German government was trying to usher people out of the workforce. They invented this thing called retirement, and they said, you're retired, and then they told people, you know, the Germans have a much more efficient way of doing things. You're retired, go home, play golf. And so the idea of retirement was you left the workforce to make room for younger people and you lived 3 or 4 years, then you died. Well, now we've got this retirement where you take yourself out of the workforce for 30 years. And it makes no sense for society and it makes no sense for the people. Mitch Anthony, the person who wrote The New Retirementality, talks about people who retire and they become masters of the 19th hole at the golf course. They drink themselves to oblivion. And he says, you know, he would go back and he would talk to people who've retired, and they don't look so good. They're outside the mainstream. Their minds are not sharp anymore. They're not relevant anymore. And so as much as Tim and Beth both showed that working in retirement can make those numbers work, those retirement numbers, more than anything else, you can get a higher rate of return. That doesn't have near the impact as working part-time can have. And what I think we're seeing now is people, yes, I'm here. Didn't even notice me. I think what we're seeing now is people recognizing that retiring is not good for your own health. And so it's not just a financial issue. It is, you know, working at least part-time. One of the great lines that I've ever heard on this, there's an advisor in Sacramento, California, who says, fundamentally what I do is I help people leave a high-paying, crappy job and take a crappy-paying, wonderful job. And I think that may be an important aspect of your service going forward. Some of you are absolutely great on the investment management side. You need to become absolutely great at helping people downsize, downshift, and continue to be relevant and to be happy. From there, the Indian presentation. The takeaway there, I think, is that India, the Indian people, clearly feel like they have only temporarily left the preeminence as an economic power. Now, the fact that they were preeminent in 1500, 500 years ago, and now only now are returning to that role doesn't seem to matter. To us, it seems like, well, you know, it's like the Roman Empire. You're gone. You're not ever coming back. To them, it's we're gone. Now we're back. And that degree of confidence is a little bit frightening. I think, and we're going to get a session momentarily, it's going to talk about that, but I think more than anything else, the determination of success is confidence. If you go to the U.S., you see an abundance of confidence for no obvious reason. Doesn't seem to matter. It seems to help. And I think you see that confidence in India. They know they're coming back, and they know they're going to be a dominant power in the world. And because they know that, I would bet on them. And I'm sitting here looking at this, and I'm thinking, you know, wow, this is... When you start talking about, you know, we were the 25% of GDP in the 1500s, and we will be again. You know, that's a powerful statement. The longevity risk issue, I don't think there is a way that we can avoid that issue. And I'm just gonna throw it out there. I think it's really, really important that we get the longevity number right when you do your retirement sufficiency analysis. And in order to do that, you've got to do a much better job of analyzing a number that you've basically pulled out of the year before. And it's if David Williams has come up with a methodology, and he has promised to do that within, what, 3 months? It'll be the only methodology out there that looks at the specific circumstances of your client's life. And that may be an important tool. I asked him for an exclusive so I can introduce it to the U.S. market. He's granted that to me. Exclusives in this day and age mean I'll know it an hour before everybody else does. It's all right. I can deal with that. Trends in investment markets. I don't think I'm qualified to tell you what the relevance and takeaways of that session was, except that it seems to me that the Australian market is benefiting tremendously in many ways from the rise in China and the rise in India, in ways that are simply not benefiting other countries. And so what I would do, if I were you, is pay attention to the relationship between Australia and those countries and what that means economically and what that means in terms of returns. People up here talk much more confidently about the link between prosperity there and prosperity here than I hear in the U.S. And so, you know, you've got a lot of different estimated growth rates. You've got a lot of different issues to talk about. But it seems to me there's a bigger issue. And the bigger issue is, you know, the economy here has linked itself to, in terms of natural resources, providing natural resources, and also providing services and giving. I'm drawing a mental blank, but in terms of your human capital, I think people are going to draw on your human capital first before they draw on human capital from Japan, from the U.S., from some of the economies that. That they regard as their natural competitors. And finally, two things. I thought that morning breakfast session was absolutely fantastic. You know, what can I say about that? As my role as inquisitor, what I was going to do, and I decided not to do it, I was going to step over an inquisitor and say, Bob, that was a fantastic session. Three books that I think redefine everything. And so to the extent you're interested, you're paying attention, I think adding those three books to your reading list sometime over the next year is going to help you communicate to clients that there's a fundamental shift in the paradigm. And the fundamental shift in the paradigm, unfortunately, is not shifting to something that we can recognize yet. We don't know what it's going to be. And if I had to guess, you'll know before I do. So I would recommend that. Alessandro Luigi, first time I've ever seen anybody analyze the sell decisions before. I think there's going to be a lot more about that. Seems to me that the ideal pairing is somebody who's really good on the buy side with somebody who's really good on the sell side. And it seems to me that sooner or later, they need to let mutual funds sell short as well as buy long. And I think eventually you're going to see a more hedge fund-like behavior out of mutual funds. I think you're going to see short selling. I think you're going to see people, when they come up with a crappy stock, why should that be irrelevant information? You know? Or when they decide, hey, I don't want to own this stock anymore, I know something awful about it, you know, they should be able to switch from a buy to a sell. They should be able to shift from a long to a short position. Since they're not doing that right now, I think this is just something to watch and something to he neatly ducked the question of how that affects his evaluation of mutual funds, but I'd love to see a service that shows which funds have done a good job on the sell side as well as the buy side. I'd love to see that analysis done. And so maybe there's a commercial product there. And of course, Tim, you know, Tim is Tim. Tim makes the complex look simple and the simple look complex. That's what he does. That's what he does for a living. My takeaway is I think he probably gives you a better evaluation without bullshit than anybody I've run into. And it's that lack of bullshit that's really, really valuable. You know, he's willing to say, I'm bearish on this and I don't care what anybody says. I'm not feeling the pressure that the rest of us feel to be positive, to be marketing oriented. And that's a voice you need to have somewhere in the back of your mind. And so other than that, I think it was a pretty damn good conference, despite that morning breakfast speaker. I think it was good. And I want to thank you for your attention. This is a really good audience. I think you deserve this conference, and this conference deserves you. So thank you. Do I get the brain?
Yeah, that's right. You get the brain. Where's Tim? Is Tim gone? Exhausted at the back?
No, he's...
He's over there. Look, Tim and Bob are just...
Over here.
Over where?
Over here.
There you go. Tim over in the back corner and Bob over in this corner. Deirdre and I and the rest of the crew who worked tirelessly to put the conference program together really owe a tremendous debt of gratitude on an ongoing basis to the way the two of Tim and Bob work in putting all sorts of interesting dynamics for us to merely deliver to you. So thank you, Bob. Thank you, Tim.